You're listening to a Tales Yet Told production. Viewer discretion is advised.
Blood in the Snow is a horror actual play series using the game Hunt by Gila RPGs. This story is inspired by gothic tales of monster hunting and vampirism, so be wary. And check the episode description for content warnings as well as a list of cast and crew.
Sanguis Populi, the blood of the people. Protector knights, guardians of the crypt, overseers of funerary rites, residing in a crimson castle on the top of the hill that looms over the hidden city of Azeroth, deep within the illusory forest. The last hour of the sun's light illuminates a small courtyard stained with muddy footprints, red from the natural hue of the soil still wet from yesterday's spring rains. Training dummies have been pushed aside, and a crowd has gathered. 2 days ago, one knight by the name of Swan Arcadi was challenged to a friendly duel in a not-so-friendly way by an older knight by the name of Titus Basilisk. It was a matter of a bruised ego and one too many drinks, but he threw the gauntlet, and he wants to put Swan's skills to the test. The storm has broken. It's a little bit drier today than it was before. Still muddy, but comparatively dry. The day has come. A handful of other knights and a few townsfolk that heard about the fight are crowded around. As the light of the setting sun peeks through a gap in the clouds illuminating Swan Arcadi, Joe, what do we see?
Swan Arcadi is a lean, muscle, sort of tall, agile-looking athlete of a knight. She has long, sort of blood-red hair and, like, a healthy, like, tan and, like, kind of freckle to her. She is rich, so there is a very perpetual, like, distaste, disgust, a tired, bored look to her at all times, rolling her eyes. And listen, it's not her fault that she only joined a couple years ago at this point, and she is by far one of the best fencers. Anything related to a pole arm, anything related to a one-handed sort of weapon, if it isn't cumbersome, she's going to take you down. And listen, all she said over that fateful dinner was, "Well, I know that I could beat you, Titus Basilisk." And now we're here.
And in comparison, Titus is serpentine from the waist down, but is shorter in length than you'd expect for a Naga. And he compensates for this with an over-bloated ego. He's nearly twice your age, and the stories you've heard say that he was in your position years ago. Young hotshot, eager to get out into the field. His breastplate is worn and weathered, having saved him countless times. His blade is long and serrated, and stories say that he once coated this blade with venom to slay a chimera that had been terrorizing the forest. Around half the scales in Titus are outfitted with steel plates, just enough to provide a little bit more protection, not enough to restrict his ability to coil. He points his blade towards you, Swan, and he says,
"In front of all these people, I'll prove that you're not half the knight I was, am, or ever will be. I'll lumble that ego of yours, Swan. If it's glory you want, you can try your best to take it from me."
And then he looks out towards the crowd of people and he goes,
"And after you fail, I'll gladly celebrate here with anyone that wants to help me actually break a sweat later."
And there's a few chuckles.
"We failed to clarify one thing, Titus Basilisk. This is a battle to the death."
You see him blink almost in, like, surprise. But then a small smirk grows onto their serpentine face. It's not often a commotion like this begins to brew in Azeroth, and people can't take their eyes off of you two. The anticipation is through the roof. He looks over at the crowd and then back to you and goes,
"So be it. Two enter the ring and one comes out."
Referring to the circle that has been drawn into the ground and creates a bit of a barrier between you and the rest of your impromptu audience. He pulls out his blade, he points it toward you, and he goes,
"Then let us begin."
And at that, let's jump into somewhat of a combat scenario. How this is going to work, since we're playing Hunt, is that I'm going to give you a chance to define how you want to approach this scenario. And that is going to determine how things turn out. You'll be able to use either your Valor, your Guile, or your Haste. Valor for bold things, sort of reckless things, more forceful things. Guile for the more methodical, calculated decisions, and Haste for the faster paced, quick decisions, more instinctive. So, with that said, how will you first start to approach Titus?
We never laid out any rules about playing fair. It's still muddy outside.
That it is.
I have a spear is my weapon of choice, and I am going to use guile at first, and I'm going to use the butt end of my spear to kick up literally mud and dirt and sand up into his area to get an advantage.
Okay, so you immediately start the conflict by throwing this red clay-like mud into this man's face, affecting his ability to effectively see you. He stumbles a little bit despite, you know, not having feet to stumble with, but loses his balance would be the right word to use. And he is now moving toward you as he's wiping out the clay with their free hand, and moving toward you and struggling to get like a good bead on you as they swing and swipe down at you with that large serrated blade like a saw. You can use haste to try to dodge out of the way.
I'll use haste, absolutely.
All right, so you duck and dodge past the blade as it swings over your head, and it creates an opening for you. His back is turned. The tail end of his serpentine body is closer to you than his head is currently, and his arm has overextended in a way where you know for a fact that you have your first clear opening. How do you approach it?
I want to use my spear as if it were a jagged, blunt, disgusting thing. And by that, I mean I want to get into the meatier part of his torso and then just sort of almost dig in deep and then pull out a little bit and then back in. Sort of, that can be valor, or I will take it to be anything.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be valor since you're just jumping right on in there.
Yeah.
You said you're taking this in with the blunt end?
With the blade now.
With the blade now. So you go up and you see the scales on Titus's serpentine body. About every other one has these steel plates fixed to them. to give him a little bit more protection. But since his back is completely turned, you have a clear opening to try to peer straight through one of the ones that are not covered in a steel plate. And as you do, you see like the green of his blood splurt out. And as it lands on your hand, you do feel almost like a slight burning sensation, like perhaps that venom that you hear he used against the Chimera seems to potentially be sourced from himself. It almost burns immediately upon touch, but you are wearing gloves and armor, I suppose. As he's lashing out from the pain, he attempts to just roll over, since he has a cylindrical body, to just roll over and throw you off of his back, launching you into the mud and skidding across the ground. And he immediately is bleeding all over the ground just from having the blade thrusted into his body. And he tries his best to correct himself before moving in one more time. You've already got him on the back foot here. Well, you've already got him at a huge disadvantage. You already struck a pretty mean, gnarly blow against him. And you can tell that you can finish him right now. How do you approach finishing Titus?
I'm going to lunge. Closing the gap, aiming true, and with perhaps his last image of me being a sick fascination with his blood. With a twisted, devilish, half-cocked smile, curiosity and interest, anticipation, not the bored, distasteful sort of looks, the rolling eyes, a full grounded attention from her to him this time. And she smiles big, laughs, and she plunges for his heart.
And your blade pierces through his scales, and you watch his eyes widen at the moment the blade pierces through the heart of Sir Titus, emerging on the other side of that body. He immediately begins to fall limp, but at the end of a spear, you're too far for him to catch onto you as he stumbles and struggles, eventually finding himself falling into that blood-red mud, heaving his last breaths.
It's what I like about spears. I'm on this side. You're on that side. Picked, plucked, like a little thing. Rest well, Titus Basilisk.
And as you say these last words, the last words that Titus will ever hear, you watch the light fade from his eyes. He is but mortal. And all knights eventually die. As this blood is shed, the crowd had been cheering and was hyped up for most of this fight. But as they watch him take his last breath, gasps enter the air, and a few of the knights push past and go to go check on Titus. Perhaps they can drag him to infirmary and maybe he will live, perhaps. Maybe. And they try their best to drag his body away. As this crowd slowly begins to disperse.
What? Everyone? They were the terms that were agreed upon. Let us fight and spar now, as Titus said, right? No?
And you do see a few people as you're addressing this audience that's like, they've gasped in like the, oh shit, he's actually dead. You do see people beginning to like just leave at that and not even listening to your attempts to go, hey, these were just the terms. But you do see a handful of people like sticking around to like ask you like, oh, do you want to go to get a drink later at the taverns and stuff like that. And as the crowd disperses and the sun finally begins to disappear, giving way to the moon, and you start gathering your equipment to leave, you hear footsteps approaching you from behind. Dressed only in the finest of fabrics, mostly white with ornate red embellishments, possibly dyed using the iconic natural red hues of the grass surrounding Azeroth, he's tall, lean, with long hair, currently pulled into a ponytail, and he has to bend over a little to meet you eye to eye. Lord Anastasios, one of Sanguis Populi's biggest financial supporters, who is typically a recluse.
I suppose I've missed your duel.
Yes, you have, my lord. What a shame.
I'm sure you fought valiantly.
I fought within the agreed terms.
And he gives you a little bit of a smile.
I've heard about your adventures. You don't stick around for patrols much. You prefer that glory, power, adventure.
I prefer the gratuity.
Gratuity. That's a good way to put it.
And he sort of looks up at the night sky and then back down to you.
I would love to honor your valiant heroics. Would you care for joining me for dinner 2 weeks from now, the night of the full moon?
A party?
Perhaps.
Certainly.
I'll make sure my assistants give you all the information that you need to know. I want to have a bit of a fancier deal. I suppose I've been away from the people of Azeroth for a long time. I believe now's the time to get more acquainted, at least, with Sanguis Populi, since you're so meaningful here, and I would love to have you.
I would love to be had.
And he gives you, like, one of those, like, gentlemanly, like, kiss on the back of the hand sort of deals. And then he goes,
then I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
And at that, you see him begin to walk away, and you see the carriage that he pulled up on with a overhang over it that prevents him from being seen from the outside of it. And his driver pulls open the door to the carriage, allowing him to step in as he gives you one last wave. And as this is happening, Titus's body is finally being shepherded into the halls of the castle, the Crimson Castle of Sanguis Populi. The doors of the grand reception hall burst open, letting wind blow through the chamber, kicking up the ornate handcrafted rug that leads to the center of the room. The knights struggle a bit to carry Titus due to the serpentine nature of his body. They drag a little, slowly but surely escaping the gaze of the statues of the greatest knights to ever have lived. Titus had thought he'd be immortalized up there one day. But as he fades in and out of consciousness, fear, uncertainty, and anger courses through him, knowing that he's going to die before that ever comes into fruition, as the last of his blood seeps out through every foot they drag him. And that's where the doc comes in. Sanguis Populi has been around for quite some time and saved quite a few lives. They're a staple of the city. Of course, there would be citizens who offer their aid to the Order. In this case, we have Blythe. Young Dr. Blythe, you've probably heard word that there was going to be a duel today between Swan and Titus. Either way, you know there's a possibility that you're going to get a wounded knight soon. And as soon as you hear metal boots clinking across the stone floors, what do we see as you prepare for the inevitability of, you know, a visitor?
The inevitability of a visitor wasn't really a concern to Blythe, as he heard who was supposedly dueling this afternoon. And when he heard the name of Swan mentioned as one of the combatants, he did not even bother to prepare. What you see standing in his office is a young gentleman, very, at the moment, fresh-faced, mid-length black hair, quite unkempt, despite being so put together clothing-wise, wearing a vest, clean shirt, an apron to cover his garb, and as the knights stroll into his office, bringing a wounded body, he is unbothered, cleaning his instruments. And as he looks towards them, he just lets out a sigh of, not really displeasure, but of kind of futility. In reality, Blythe knows whoever this other person is can only be considered as dead by the time they've gotten to the office.
And that he is. When the knights arrived, they struggled pulling that limp body onto your table. And it probably didn't take too much for you to be able to tell that that man's already dead.
I don't really understand. Why bring him here? What's the point of putting him in the table?
See, is it too late? Is there anything you can do?
How long have you been knights here?
And one of the knights that you're talking to has only been a knight for about 6 months. Like, they just joined. And the older one is, you can tell, more experienced. And while this is all futile, you can tell that he just doesn't want to let this knight know that he didn't try. He couldn't have tried. There's a hardened look to the older.
Well, you seem quite familiar already with how things work here. But you seem new.
Yes.
Well, if the name Swan is attached to any duel, don't come to me. Elvira can take care of everything. This man was dead as soon as he made the deal. Unfortunate, yes.
And a hush falls over the room, and a feeling of defeat washes over the younger knight. And the older knight just places a hand on his shoulder.
It happens, kid. We'll go alert the Crypt Keepers.
Look, I don't mean to be crass. I don't mean to be nonchalant about this. It is quite upsetting that one of us was taken down by our own. But it is the nature of the culture here. If I could have changed it, I would. But unfortunately, Miss Swan is known to do what they please. You'll get used to it. I have.
And tears flow from the face of the younger knight for a moment, but you see him wipe the tears away and steel himself.
Thank you, Doctor. We'll get out of your hair now.
Well, at least Titus is known for poisons, and I've wondered how he's done it. At the very least, let me study his blood. Let me get a sample before you leave. Maybe his passing might be of use of us, at least.
And both of them give a nod. We'll leave you to it, then.
And I take instruments, clinking and clanking, as I take a syringe. Take samples of the blood, put them in vials, put them in jars, and send them off as the body is ready to move on to its next stage.
And Eventually, you do hear a knock at the door during the process after the knights have already left. And you see a tall and portly woman with feathered ears and eyebrows, denoting a fey ancestry of some kind, dressed in vestments befitting a priest. Your confidant, Maeve, stands in the doorway.
I was told that a knight was wounded in the duel. Was everything okay?
Well, wounded isn't really the term I'd use. Unfortunately, he's passed.
She does like a small prayer that you've probably seen her do before after her learning of another knight that's passed. She runs the temple outside of which the crypt entrance is. And she comes into the infirmary that you've got set up in the castle and goes, well, are you okay?
Of course. I'm quite used to this by this point.
Being used to it doesn't mean that it's okay. How are you holding up?
I'm quite well, actually. I think my time here has given me a little bit of insight.
On what?
That life is frail. There are moments that I wish I could save more, but I know in certain circumstances I can't do much. I mean, it does bother me. It does. But that will just be a hindrance to work.
I respect your commitment.
And I respect yours. This might not be easy, being surrounded by death. I don't understand how they can do it, really. Revel in it. Be proud of killing, whether it's creatures or their own.
I can't speak for the knights, as I'm not one myself. But housing the crypt near the temple, I watch bodies carted in every time. And it is heartbreaking every time. Even though I don't see what causes it. But whether it's by sickness or by blade, we all end up in the ground one day. It's unfortunate.
Hopefully we can stay that away as long as we can.
Right. Anyway.
I'm so rude. Can I get you anything?
Oh,
tea?
No, it's all fine. I've got plenty of tea back at the temple. I also was told to let you know that Lord Anastasios is planning a banquet, and they want you there as well.
Me? That's odd, but I guess I appreciate the sentiment.
I've also been invited, so I do share the surprise. I'm not a knight, neither are you, but it's an honor. I think we should show up.
Well, knowing you'll be there, I think it would be nice to know a familiar, more pleasant face will be attending as well.
Then I'll see you there. And if you ever need comfort, the temple will always be open to you.
I appreciate that.
And she gives you a warm smile and turns.
Hey, hey, hey! It's your host with the most love for butter toast, Lil Harry from 2048 AM, Voices in the Wood. Stopping by real quick to do an ad read, because, it costs money to keep the lights on in the studio. I was getting to it, Reggie. Okay, don't worry about him. He's just so excited because Hero Forge is announcing their 2025 Black Friday sale. When we're not infusing the airwaves with chill tunes and riveting conversation, me and the Wolfpack are actually playing a lot of Mazes and Monsters back at Donnie's place. The game just doesn't really feel the same without having a little guy there that I can pick up and move around. We all actually designed our characters on their website, and I chose to make my shapeshifter assassin, Zod. And because of the sale, from now until December 1st, we can get 20% off of the physical miniatures and accessories, like color plastic miniatures for the table, acrylic keychains for when we're out at the mall or something. They also have 50% off of digital miniatures for virtual tabletops? What is... STLs for home printing. You could do that? What? Hey, wait, Reggie, can we just print these at home? Do you have a printer that can do that? I don't know. Maybe we can do it too. I mean, it's 50% off, so why not try, I guess. Don't forget, the Hero Forge Black Friday sale ends December 1st, so do it! Do it now! if you want to know more, go to heroforge.com/sale to do just that. Reggie, I think it's probably time for a new caller. Put him on.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes... This bar's next.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude world. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck!
We drift away from the Crimson Castle. The light of three different moons falls onto the cemetery, which was placed directly between the town and the hill the Crimson Castle rests upon. Tributes left behind for the dead decorate the gravestones. The stone pathways are stained with the same muddy red footprints from yesterday's weather. Some of these footprints lead to a small building with a domed roof and a slightly open steel gate. Inside is nothing more than a spiral staircase leading deep underground. It is down these stairs into the crypt below that we venture next. Narrow passageways lined with carved out alcoves where the dead rest eternally. Candles rest in wall sconces, flickering amber light through the halls, similar to the cemetery above. Gifts for the dead have been placed in designated spaces along the entire crypt as tribute. Only these tributes aren't out in the open, like the ones above, which makes them easier for Alaric to steal.
At least that's what he thinks. He slinks through the crypt silently, carefully, sliding silver coins and heirloom necklaces into a burlap sack, believing himself to be oh so clever. Elvira. Tonight's keeper of the crypt, and yesterday's, and likely tomorrow's too. You've been hearing this clinking and self-satisfied snickering for a while now, trying to trace the echoes to their source. You finally see him, a dwarfish fellow, who you've never seen before, perhaps passing through town and attempting to make the best of it by stealing from those who can no longer defend themselves. The dead. He's unaware that you have your eyes on him. What do we see?
Standing in the dark, Elvira is about as tall as this dugout cavern is. The armor she wears doesn't seem to reflect light in the same way that one would expect metal to. So as she moves forward, there is no glinting. Just a large, dark figure moving closer. For her size, she is rather quiet, a practiced skill on her part. She has time more than anything else in these crypts. And it's easier to catch the rats before they can hear you move. And what will work on rats will work on a thief. And so I think he doesn't realize until Elvira is standing in his path and he bumps into her, falling back on his ass to the ground, looking up at the towering figure above him. And there's no face to look back down at. Just the cold, hard plating of a helm.
And as he looks up at you with terror in his eyes, because he thought he was down here alone, you just hear, "Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck."
And a voice echoing out from underneath the helmet goes, "Do you take pleasure in your work?"
What?
"This thing you do. Do you take pleasure in it?"
No.
"Then why do you do it?"
"Look, I..."
"You come into the home of the dead," and she takes a step forward, "and take what is rightfully theirs, given to them by those they love. And you make it your own, knowing that they cannot stop you even if they want it." And takes another step forward.
"Look, I just thought that they're not going to make use of it."
"Who are you to say that?"
Oh. And you can see on his expression that he knows he's fucked up. And his eyes are darting around looking for an exit. Looking for a way out of this conversation, this situation.
Elvira knows these halls better than anyone. And so she has kind of backed him up to a place where there is kind of like at a cross section of a bunch of different like halls. Like there is a path for him to escape. And when he tries, she does not stop him immediately.
So as he turns and he runs down the left side of the intersection, how do you approach this situation?
Well, there are only two different ways that that can go, and he's definitely not going to go back the way he came because he knows that that leads to the dead end. So he's going to take the left passage while Vera will already be there waiting for him.
And so he goes down this left passage, and you hear the sounds of his feet pitter-pattering until eventually the sound of his face colliding with the metal of your armor clunks and echoes across the catacombs. And he looks up at you one more time, too stunned to speak.
You know, I do this because, unlike you, I do take pleasure in my work. To her side, she is holding this long, dark staff that is mounted with what I think is an unlit lantern. And it's this, like, cold steel, heavy metal. And she raises it and slams it on the ground, and the lantern lights up, catching a flame.
You immediately watch this man piss himself, and you can see it beginning to pool around his feet as he's attempting to back away from you on the floor, not even managing to scurry to his full height.
She says, I will give you 1 minute to return everything to its rightful place. Any longer, and I will make sure your death is painful. But it will be quick if you can do it in time.
Now? Starting now?
She just stands there.
Fuck. Fuck. And he immediately gets up and grabs the burlap sack and disappears through the darkness. And you can hear the jingling of the sack as he tries his best to find where every single spot was. However, I'm sure you knew that 1 minute would not be enough.
Oh, of course not. It takes at least 3 to get back. And so Elvira waits at the entrance, waiting for him to eventually come back, because there is only one way out.
And eventually he comes back with an empty sack, and he immediately falls onto his knees, tears in his eyes.
Sorry, please, I didn't mean to offend you.
You did not offend me. You offended all those who lie here in their rest, and those who love them enough to come and give them cherished gifts for them to take into the afterlife. Those are the ones you failed. Those are the ones you've disrespected. Tell me, how does it feel to know that your end is close at hand? And she raises her staff.
And he immediately, hands up, cowers away from the staff.
I don't want to die.
Is there anyone in this moment you wish you had said something to? And, like, raises it above her head.
My cousin. He didn't know I left. I never said goodbye.
And she brings down the staff and stops it just above his head. Just enough for the flames to kind of start to singe the top of his head. Then go tell that person you love them. And remember how it felt to believe you were going to die.
And he immediately runs away into the night, disappearing into the hills of Azeroth. And you hear a voice behind you.
Elvira!
It's Marquise, the head of the Division of Knights, who watched the crypt.
It's been 3 days, Elvira. You can't stay down here forever.
He's like coming out from behind like a tombstone in the cemetery, seeing you standing at the entrance.
Someone must watch the bodies, and none do so as diligently. I come here, there are many rats I must kill.
I think you've been down here for too long.
It can't have been that
long. It's been 3 days. I've worked the cemetery shift twice, and I haven't seen you come up on either one.
Ah, yes. There was thief.
Ali told me you took his shift 2 days ago.
He said his back was hurt.
Of course, Ali said that. Look, I understand that you're dedicated to the cause. But you need to learn to relax sometimes. At this rate, you won't get any rest until you're the one being put to rest in the crypt.
I make sure to eat and drink when necessary. And I have gotten quite used to taking small breaks while just standing. That way, if anyone were to come in, they would think that I'm still there protecting it, and that prevents, you know, it scares them so that they don't, you know.
How long have you been wearing that helmet, Elvira?
Well,
when was the last time you took it off?
If you are saying I started my shift 3 days ago, then 4 days ago.
And Marquise just stares at you. Marquise has like a big bushy beard that when he does wear his helmet, it just sticks out the bottom of the helmet. And it's like got specks of gray in it. He has big old brown eyes, a bald head, and a notable like tattoo on their right cheek of two daggers crossed over one another. And he sort of just like looks at you in disbelief and goes,
"We're gonna have someone come by and relieve you of your shift so you can take some time off. And in 2 weeks, that lord, the recluse, Anastasius, I think his name was, he wants all of us knights to gather for a banquet. Take a break. Come on up."
What if someone tries to use that as an opportunity to break into the
crypt? We'll lock the crypt down.
If all the knights were there, someone should be here to make sure it is locked down.
It's going to be fine for just one night, Elvira. Just a few hours is all I'm asking. It'll be good for you. Please.
Okay, I will go. But I will make sure that it is locked down. I will do a security check before the banquet, just to make sure that everything is sealed off.
If that's what it takes. Now let's go get you some food you can eat with your helmet off, and some shoes that don't have metal plating.
I have gotten very good at eating through helmet.
Oh, I'm sure, Elvira. I'm sure.
It is all about sight.
And as we fade away from that scene, these 2 weeks pass by relatively uneventful, just normal stuff for the Knights of Cinguis Populi. But let's take a look at each and every one of you in your quarters getting ready for the banquet. Swan, what is Swan Arcadi planning on wearing to this banquet?
A fully white leather sort of ensemble. Some golden buttons, languishing sleeves, something I can move around and dance in. But if anything were to happen, my mobility would not be impeded.
Fitting. What does Blythe plan on wearing to this banquet?
Blythe plans to wear a pinstriped double-breasted suit. It's navy blue with gray pinstripes, with a royal blue ascot, and just a regular white shirt.
All right. And what can we find Elvira in?
I think she's probably just wearing like casual clothing. Something that's like easy for her to move in. And it's like, I don't think she really has like a lot of fancy clothes. Yeah, she like really just has
a hoodie. Like,
not a hoodie. Not a hoodie. But she has just like a simple like cotton shirt with like maybe like a leather jerkin is like as like fancy as it gets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like some like really like clean like boots.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, yeah, it's still functional for like she's ready to bounce whenever is necessary. Just like the moment that it's like, oh man, there seems like there's going to be trouble outside, or like I heard someone say something's going on at the crypt, I'm ready to leave and like go get on my armor and go do what I need to do. I probably bring my staff if they let me bring it in through the door. If not, like, we'll like be like, okay, keep it at a place where I can see it and go get it in case I need to. I might have to leave very quickly. It just depends.
Do they let us be armed?
I feel as though they do, because this banquet is actually being held in a banquet hall that has, for the longest time, not been used in the Crimson Castle. Where better to hold a banquet for Sanguis Populi than in their own walls? This room did require a lot of dusting off, but it's usable. Each and every one of you are, as you walk through the halls looking for where the doors are, you see the other knights moving by you in their own fancy outfits. Whether they're wearing dresses or sort of a tighter fitting robe or more like a suit sort of affair. You do see plenty of the other knights all similarly dolled up. And eventually, all three of you cross paths in front of the closed grand doors of the banquet hall. And you see each other.
Elvira Blythe.
Hello.
Good evening.
Blythe, you are well dressed.
I mean, it is a banquet, and I don't have any regalia to put on, so...
I'm surprised. Elvira.
Yes.
You look like a commoner.
I was before I was knight.
Well, that's not the point that I was trying to make, but I see. It is interesting, but actually, you are here, Blythe. I thought you were a doctor.
I'm just as surprised as you.
And then I'm seeing that person, I believe, just washes linens. And then this other person, these are scientists. She looks around, was led to believe that this was going to be a banquet of prestige.
I think everybody's job is just as important, but I understand why you would assume that. Good work with tightness.
Thank you. Yes. Everyone was very upset with me.
That is something I was quite surprised as well. I assumed by the time that you were done with them, they would have brought them straight to Elvira.
Well, they can do with what they want. I lay things out very clearly to everyone. And for some reason, that is a bright new perspective, apparently.
Might be a little too bright. A little too new.
Did you have a fun time, Elvira, dressing up the body?
I wouldn't call it fun. It was pleasing to...
Did you do a good job then, whatever?
I feel like I always do a good job. If I am not, I would love for someone to tell me what I could be doing better. But so far, most people just seem to tell me I should slow down doing it in general, which seems counterproductive.
By all the dryads, it is such a bore to listen to you speak.
I'm sorry? You asked a question and I answered. I figured that's how that was. I could dress it up more if you would like. I'm not the best with words. There aren't many people to talk to in the crypt.
Swan, the excitement of battle doesn't have to be carried over with social interactions like this. I think this is quite pleasant. Nice.
I'm just excited to see what Lord Anastasios was thinking bringing Everyone.
With your excitement comes my curiosity. You are right. This is quite a huge banquet for all of the staff and all the knights be congregated together under this banquet hall.
Can I start taking a look around? I think the two of them, like, questioning things is now putting me on alert of, like, oh, shit, is this a trap? Is someone going to the crypt? And so, like, I just want to, like, I'm taking a look at exits. Does it seem like there are guards posted? Like, what's the vibe?
You'll notice that it's actually oddly unguarded. Since all the knights are actually wearing their formal clothes.
Yeah, I guess we're all here.
Yeah.
And so you see mostly like, Wilhelm is supposed to be guard. Oh, wait, Wilhelm's also in formal clothes. And you see just formal looking knight after formal looking knight after servant after cook after just all sorts of people who work within the Crimson Castle are here, dressed in their best. And as you look down a hall, you see coming around the corner, followed by around three others, Lord Anastasios, dressed in a loose, flowy white fabric with red trim along the sleeves, red shoes, and his hair taken down from the ponytail so that it flows as he walks down the hallway, greeting the knights as they walk past him. And he eventually sees all three of you standing in front of the doors to the great banquet hall, and he goes, "Oh, everyone's here. I'm excited to get to dine with you all."
I don't mean to speak for everybody else, but I think we share the same sentiment. Thank you for inviting us to such a lovely banquet. Especially us, the staff.
Oh, well. This castle wouldn't be the same without you.
It's nice to be appreciated.
And tonight, we'll be able to appreciate a delicious meal served by my own personal cooking staff, since I've made sure to give yours a break tonight. Now, let's say we get this banquet started.
Well, after you.
And he turns towards the giant wooden doors and he pushes them open. And as the doors swing open, we fade to black.
Blood in the Snow features Oleander as Game Master, Kendrick as Elvira Jabril, Fabian Lillet as Blythe, and Josephine as Swan Arcadi, with editing and sound design by Oleander.